Romantic comedies love a makeover. The leading lady sheds her frumpy outer layer to reveal the goddess underneath, and just in time to walk down a staircase and share a breathless smile with her handsome prince. You've seen this sequence over and over because it works. It's typically a montage. But it raises a lot of questions. Why is physical appearance so closely tied to romantic love? Who sets those standards of beauty, and why do we accept them or not? If you cringe when a lady takes off her glasses and triples her chances of going to the prom, this episode is for you. It's time for some rom-com decon. All right, so here we are, ready to talk about keeping up appearances in romantic comedies. And my guest today is my good friend, Haley Gibson. Haley, to help our audience get to know you, what are your top three favorite rom-coms, starting at number three?
The third one is You've Got Mail. The second one is The Proposal. And the first is She's the Man.
Great. I love two of those three. So we can talk about The Proposal later and how I didn't love it. And I'm sorry, Betty White and Sandra, you're my queen. But
yes,
it just wasn't my favorite. All right. But moving on from that, I do love those other two. And I know The Proposal is a favorite of many. So I'm outlier in that regard. All right. So to help us get into the topic today, I'm going to play a little game of Wits and Wagers with you.
Okay.
So for anyone out there who has never played Wits and Wagers, it's basically a board game where there's trivia questions with numerical answers, and everyone playing the game has to give a number that they think is close to the correct answer, and then you bet on which ones are the correct answer, and whoever's closest, without going over Price is Right style, I like to call it, then that person wins points. It's just Haley and I. And I made up the question, so there will be no wagering. So this is basically just wits. But my name's Whitney, so it kind of works.
That's adorable. She does that every time.
Anyway, so I've written five questions here, and Haley's just going to give me a numerical answer.
Okay.
And then we are going to dive right into talking about our five rom-coms that have to deal with keeping up appearances. Question number one.
Okay.
According to the Huffington Post, how many calories does a Gilmore Girl eat in a single day?
Oh, man, that's got to be like 3,000 or 4,000.
You are really close. The number they calculated was 3,970. So I'm going to give you that point. That was really good.
Thank you. Yeah. They eat like crazy.
You guys are looking so great, you Gilmores. All right. So according to Entertainment Weekly and Box Office Mojo, the highest grossing romantic comedy of all time is, can you guess?
I think I might have cheated on this, but I think it's My Big Fat
Greek Wedding. It is My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Yeah. Good. You did your research.
I looked at the Internet Movie Database thing. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know how much money it grossed in millions over the course of its run?
Oh, I want to say like 100 million. I know it was in theaters even after it was released on DVD.
Great. Okay. It was 241 million. So
okay, so I was
that's
way
really
off.
Good. I mean, it's not endgame numbers, yeah. But what are? All right. So the next two are about the play Pygmalion, and they're definitely the hardest questions. So
okay.
I got really into doing the math on these. But Pygmalion, which is also My Fair Lady, which is also kind of She's All That, which is why it's connected to our episode today. In the play Pygmalion, Eliza Doolittle offers to pay 12 pence for elocution lessons from Professor Higgins. Adjusted for inflation, what would that be in British pounds today?
Oh my God.
I know. There's a lot of math involved here. Just throw out a number.
I don't even know what pence was in the day. I'm going to say $60.
Okay, so I don't know what that is in pounds, but it's about 15 pounds.
Okay, that's
so you're a little bit high,
yeah.
But still, probably what you would actually pay for elocution lessons is still much higher than that.
Probably.
Following up on that, they make a bet, obviously, Colonel Pickering and Professor Higgins. And Colonel Pickering pays for the actual lessons and the room and board of Eliza. What does he pay for her lessons?
Oh, man. 75 pence. All right, so 60 pounds per day is the number that he agrees upon with Professor Higgins, plus her living expenses. And I did some math. It would be about 7,300 pounds per day.
Per day?
For her lessons. So that was some expensive makeover, I do say so myself. All right, final question. What was the reported wardrobe budget for the movie Clueless?
Okay, I know it was actually pretty cheap because I read the Internet Movie Database
trivia. You did so good!
But I want to say it was like, I mean, cheap for Hollywood, right? So I want to say it was like $200,000.
That is the exact number! Very good! Yeah. I'm so glad! You did really, really good.
Two out of the five.
Hey, there were some pretty hard ones in there. I like asked you to do inflation calculation in your head, so you know. No pressure. Awesome. Great! So now that we can see that there obviously are economics and calorie intake associated with a woman's appearance, and they don't always actually line up with what's possible in everyday reality, let's dive into the five movies on our list for today, which are, to quickly recap, Dumplin', a Netflix film that was chosen because it focuses on how a woman's size is treated as a major factor in whether or not she can be beautiful. Second, Murphy's Romance, which was chosen because it shows a quiet romance between two people who aren't from the same generation. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which was chosen because it shows a woman choosing to change herself for the better, and that includes altering her appearance. The movie She's All That, number 4, was chosen because it feels like the quintessential unnecessary makeover movie.
Yes.
And number 5, Clueless, which was chosen purely because of the sheer amount of clothing in the movie.
Yes, so much plaid.
great. So let's just start out generally. Haley, why do you think rom-coms keep focusing on appearance? Why is that a theme that keeps coming up in romantic comedies?
I think that some of it, I think, is there's this idea that attraction is related to how you look, which I don't think is always true. I think we can be attracted to people. We can be surprised by who we're attracted to. So I think that there's, you know, when you're dealing with romance and sexuality and topics like that, I think there's always this idea that appearance is somehow linked to those. So I think that that's part of it. I think there's also just, in general, a lot of societal pressure on women to look a certain way.
I would agree with all of that. And I think the reason it keeps coming up, even in more recent rom-coms, we were mentioning, Isn't It Romantic, which Haley and I saw together this year, as we're recording this, was a movie that focused on a woman's appearance, to some extent. So I think it still comes up. It tends to come up more now because women are trying to fight against that expectation rather than in the more like Pretty Woman sense of I'm supposed to be this and therefore I'm going to be that thing.
Yeah.
But it still keeps coming up either as a way to fight against those societal pressures or to reinforce them, obviously.
And I remember you saying in the theater just after, there's a scene in Isn't It Romantic where, you know, like she has this great aha moment of, I'm beautiful and I love myself no matter what, right? And then she wakes up back in the real world and she still has the fake eyelashes and she still has makeup on. And I remember you'd mentioned that. You were like, if she, you know, she's still kind of falling prey to these things, some of which is because she's an actress, right? And she's on film or whatever. But,
right.
But I do agree that we're analyzing a little bit more and fighting against it.
Yeah.
But it's still... Everybody wants to think that they look good.
Yes,
know?
Absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to present the best appearance that you can. I think it becomes a struggle when the expectation is that you will do that
all the time.
And that comes up a lot in the movies that we have on our list today. So, like, She's All That,
It's the quintessential, this person didn't need a makeover movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Rachel Lee Cook is objectively beautiful, even when she's not wearing clothes that are fashionable for whatever year that movie was made. And
her 1999.
Hair's up and her glasses are on.
Yeah.
And she doesn't care about being popular in high school, and therefore she's somehow not beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a problem of that movie, obviously. And I'm not saying I don't like it when she, like, comes down the stairs and Freddie Prinze Jr. looks up at her and you're like, ooh, he likes her.
Yeah.
Like, I like that moment, but I feel like that coming down the stairs moment is, like, the expectation of you've had a makeover and now this is what you look like and let's see how your life changes.
Now your life is better. Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, The Princess Diaries does it.
There's a scene in Clueless where she walks down the stairs, too.
Yeah!
Yeah, and Paul Rudd is like, oh, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you haven't really had a makeover unless you've walked down the stairs to find a love interest gazing up at you. Like,
lovingly, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've just gotten a haircut.
Yeah.
So, too bad. great. So, of the movies on our list, or other examples, when has this trope really worked for you? Like, when have movies treated appearances to, in a way that it actually worked for you? For me, I'll start. I think Dumplin' is one that I liked. I'm definitely not the skinniest person ever, and I identified with that character because she had insecurities about her size and about what that meant about the romantic potential she had, and I identified with that, and I don't think the movie treated it perfectly, but it addressed it in a way that a lot of movies just don't.
Yeah, and I thought it was really honest, the way that they did it. I loved Dumplin', and I actually liked My Big Fat Greek Wedding. But some of that is, these are just the most recent ones that I've seen, I think. But her kind of changing for herself, right? She goes back to school, and that's when she starts curling her hair and putting on makeup and things like that that are traditionally feminine, right? But I did love Dumplin' as well. I thought Dumplin' did a really good job.
Yeah. I think one of my minor gripes with My Big Fat Greek Wedding is that for the sake of narrative speed, she does that makeover on herself, if you even want to call it a makeover, and then she's the first guy she meets who has any romantic interest in her is like...
That's the one she marries.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very like... I'm Rapunzel, and I've never met a man, and I crawl out of my tower, and there's Flynn Rider, and dang it if we're not in love the next day.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, the way things speed up in movies is obviously, can be frustrating if you're thinking, I'm going to, you know, make these changes for myself, and hopefully also attract other people to me.
Yeah.
To have a story say that you can do that, and 3 months later, you will be dating John Corbett, whose hair is not the best John Corbett hair in that movie, but he's still very charming, and also makes a great dad, obviously, as we've seen recently on Netflix. So, when does this trope really not work? What are the reasons that it, I mean, we've already talked about some things, but maybe one movie we haven't really touched on our list yet is either Clueless or Murphy's Romance. What about the, you know, appearance or public perception and expectation in those movies doesn't really work?
So I think Clueless is a little bit easier for me than Murphy's Romance. But for me, what didn't work is the makeover with Ty. It's like, it's not just her appearance, it's her personality a little bit. Like, she really likes that skater guy. And
Breckenmeyer.
Yeah, he's so great. And then, like, she's very sweet and almost, like, naive in the beginning. There are scenes when she isn't, but especially when she first comes to the school and she's learning about it, right? And she's kind of, like, hunched over. And then there's that scene where her and Cher are kind of fighting about Josh, and she's like, you're a virgin who can't drive, right? She kind of loses some of that sweetness when her personality kind of changes as a result of the makeover. So for me, that was kind of difficult. We've talked a little bit about this before, just in our personal conversations, but I have curly hair and glasses, and I'm a plus size person. So like The Princess Diaries, right? She goes from having curly hair to having straight hair. She loses the glasses. And it's like, I just want one story where the makeover is her putting on glasses.
I'm like, that would be looking, delightful.
Yeah, you know, like, kind of looking like me, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. There, I mean, I also have curly hair, and there were times in high school when I would look in the mirror and I would see the pre-makeover and Hathaway hair, and I'd be like, this is why I don't have a date to the dance this weekend. Yeah. And that wasn't true. That wasn't the reason. But in your mind, when you're a teenager and everything means so much more, like, I would be like, this is as good as it's going to get.
Yes, yes.
And I don't actually have a grandmother who's a queen to give me a makeover.
Yeah.
I would love it, Julie Andrews. I'm still here for you.
she was fantastic. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely, why can't there be a change in appearance that's about embracing who you actually are?
Yeah, and kind of the naturally who you are.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Fabulous.
How about for you? Which ones didn't work for you?
Let's see. I mean, I feel like I'm not a huge, huge fan of the movie Clueless, but in rewatching it in preparation for this episode, I kind of liked the Emma-ness of Cher, that she's ultimately a good person who's trying to help other people with her, like, I'm gonna help you change your appearance. Yeah. And in reality, like, I've had friends like that who are better at style and hair and makeup and whatever, and who have given me those tips, and I never felt like they were trying to give me a makeover. They were like, hey, we're going to a party, let's find some cute shoes for you to put on, and like, let's do some eyeshadow.
Yeah.
And those are really actual confidence booster moments for me, so I guess that's a thing that did work for me. I like the notion of you can have a friend who can see you for who you really are and help you see this would be a way to improve the you that you're presenting to the world.
Yeah.
Because the you on the inside is already so great, but people don't necessarily see that with the way that you are presenting yourself.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of what's lacking in She's All That, obviously. There's no real relationship between the Rachel Lee Cook character and the Freddie Prinze Jr. character before they pick her out of the crowd. Paul Walker picked her out of the crowd, RIP, even though he's a jerk in this movie.
He really is the worst in this movie.
But he picks her out of the crowd, again, not noticing that she's obviously beautiful, but just, like, doesn't care about presenting herself in a traditionally beautiful way.
Yeah.
And so I identify with the idea of, like, I don't want to spend time making myself beautiful. I'd rather read a book or make a podcast or do something creative that's not involving my physical appearance.
Yeah.
But they
also, her clothes are cool.
Yeah.
Like, the paint splattered overalls, like, so artsy and, like, unique, you know what I mean? Like, I get that it wasn't in the 90s, but it's actually, like, something cool that, like, I would want to wear if I was cool enough to.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, I feel like if they made She's All That today, not a good idea, please do not do this thing. But if they did, like, they, what would they do to make her not cool? Like, everything about the Rachel Lee Cook character seems cool to me today. Like, the fact that she's politically aware, that she has creative endeavors, that she's not focused on, like, finding a boyfriend or becoming the prom queen, that she's, like, a good family member.
Yeah.
Like, she just seems like such a good person. And obviously that's, like, they wrote that character to be likable. But I don't know what things they could give someone today, like, if they were making a high school movie about someone who's, like, quote-unquote not popular. Would that person be a nerd? Nerds are cool nowadays.
Yeah.
Would that person be in choir? I don't know. Like, this is not, that's not me dissing on choir. I think choir is great. I'm just trying to figure out what
the equivalent today is.
Would be. And I haven't been in high school in many, many years, so I don't know what's cool and not cool, but I don't know.
I don't either. I feel like we've really entered, like, a fantastic age of, like, your passion is what makes you cool.
Right. You and know? Maybe it would be, like, this person's not on Instagram.
Yeah.
How dare they?
Yeah.
Like, they don't have a social media presence. Are they in the closet?
Yeah.
Like, just, like, living
maybe
under a rock?
Maybe having, like, really strict parents. So, like, they don't have a phone. Like, living off the grid. Kind of, like, weird granola people, right?
Yeah.
Not to diss on granola.
Again,
But none of these are things that I personally have problems with. I'm just trying to figure out what would be the traits of someone who's quote-unquote not cool today. Maybe it doesn't work in a place where there's internet culture and you can find people who think what you do is cool, even if they don't sit next to you in math class, you know?
Yeah.
So, great. Let's dive a little bit more into each of these movies.
Okay.
So we are going to start with My Big Fat Greek Wedding, since Haley mentioned it was one of her favorites on the rewatch of these films. So we already touched on the fact that her changing appearance is about self-improvement, not necessarily about finding a man. I don't know, anything else along those lines about her makeover scene that works or doesn't work for you? I mean, when I was rewatching it recently, I was laughing at the fact that she was like, ooh, I'm going to use my computer skills to become a travel agent. Because I feel like travel agents are like all but gone because there's things like Kayak and TripAdvisor and Airbnb. But for the sake of the movie, it works. I just don't think that particular like skill set has aged well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
But she found something that she was passionate about and she pursued it, obviously. I also like that in that makeover scene, it shows her, like, extending herself socially to other women.
Yeah.
Those women don't become a character in the movie, but she's still, as she's building her confidence, she has the courage to go outside of her social circle.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, that's a big deal, too. Like, when I know that I've put on my best appearance, I'm more prone to be friendly to others because I'm not concerned about they're perceiving me one way or another.
Yeah. No, I liked that too.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, this is like one part of it was we do get so wrapped up in what we think other people will think of us. And it's like, maybe she could have sat with those other little girls when she was a little girl, you know, she just didn't have the confidence yet.
Absolutely.
Right? And kind of already built those friendships. So I liked how they kind of played with that, right? She's giving herself the makeover. That scene where she's putting the contacts in her eyes are just hilarious, right?
Yes. Let's talk about her relationship with the man she marries at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I think that he is given some really great moments to show how he values her. Mm-hmm. The first one being when they're on their first date and she's telling him that she's actually met him before, that she was Frump Girl at the restaurant. And then he just very quickly and sincerely says, I don't remember Frump Girl, but I remember you. And I think that, I mean, as a viewer of the movie, I agree with her assessment of herself as Frump Girl. So in one half of me wishes they gave more context on why he doesn't think of her as Frump Girl.
Yeah.
But I also think it's kind of better left unsaid just for him to say, no, that's I didn't perceive you that way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Especially with her standing there awkwardly, right? Like, for me, that was like a cringe moment.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, how do you not think of her as Frump Girl? But,
yeah.
But it was so romantic and so sweet and sincere, yeah.
Right.
It was so cute, I thought.
And then I think my favorite scene in the movie is when he has chosen to be baptized into the Greek Orthodox Church in order for them to be able to be married in the church, which is something that she's thought about all of her growing up life. And it's really embarrassing. They're rubbing oil all over him. And she...
His hair is all in his face.
She says to her brother, like, he's just going to look at me and say, she's so not worth it. And her brother says, you are worth it. And I like that moment because there's two people in her life who are giving her that validation. Not that you need to be able to seek external validation, but it's helpful to be able to receive that from people who love you. And just that he would make that gesture. It's like a way different kind of grand gesture than like, I brought you roses or I got off the airplane or whatever. It's more like, this is how we're going to build our life together. We're going to make sacrifices for each other. So
he makes a lot of sacrifices for her.
He does.
That is something I noticed. Like, he gives up a lot. And I mean, she does too in some ways, right? She's marrying a non-Greek. But he gives up a lot. And then they live next door to her parents. I did kind of have a moment at the end of the film when I was like, oh my gosh, you know?
Yeah. It feels like a comedy moment rather than something that would have actually happened.
Yeah.
But It works.
I can see parents doing that.
Let's finally, before we move on to my next one, just talk about this movie as a rom-com itself. Like,
yes.
It feels like it's a rom-com in the sense that it's romantic and it's a comedy, but it's not a traditional rom-com in that you're like waiting for the couple to get together until the very end. There's no like last minute, they're not going to get married moment.
Yeah. And there's no like, in most rom-coms, there's like a conflict, right? Like Hitch is my favorite example, where she finds out that he's, you know, the matchmaker or whatever. And then they like break up, argue, don't talk to each other. And then there's a reconciliation. And this movie did not have that. You're right.
Right. It's just, the problems are external to their relationship.
Yeah.
He's very supportive of her struggles with this. She's, you know, very, like, accepting of his family and their differences and almost, like, loves them in a way because their family is small and quiet.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But, yeah, it feels like
there isn't very much tension.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the title gives away what's going to happen, but yeah. It still works as a movie because it's very funny. It's got some insight, and there's definitely...
And it's the highest grossing, like we've talked about.
Yeah,
right? It's interesting to me.
That reconciliation is more with her and her family and her, like, identity than with the couple. So that's what
makes
it fun.
Which in some ways I think is empowering too, right? And is different than... other movies on our list. And
yes, what a great transition into She's All That.
Yes.
A not empowering movie. This is an unnecessary makeover. We've already talked about that. This is obviously a retelling of Pygmalion / My Fair Lady. There's a bet involved. And in some ways, let's be fair about this, though. The Freddie Prinze Jr. character is much more redeemable than the Professor Higgins character ever is, who just literally is like, I'm using you as a statue to show off my skills.
Yeah.
Versus, like, Freddie Prinze Jr., I feel like before she walks down those stairs, there are definite moments when he already sincerely cares about her.
Mm-hmm.
So they've made him a much better person.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
So I think
like that scene at the beach where he's like, we survived, right? And
yeah.
Do you really want to hang out with my friends, right?
Yeah.
I think moments like that, definitely. Yeah.
And they give him an emotional backstory where he's obviously, like, he's tried to be everything for everyone for a long time, and that's overwhelming for him,
yeah.
And that's something he slowly confides in her, and so there is that emotional closeness that they build that even though the story going on around them and, like, the changes that he's encouraging in her aren't necessarily forward-thinking,
yeah.
It's, at least from his perspective, not fully done from a cruel point of view.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
You wanted to talk about the Matthew Lillard dance?
Yes. Oh my gosh. First of all, have you seen Good Girls?
Matthew Lillard is in that.
Yes. And he plays kind of a despicable character, but for me, he'll always be Shaggy, right?
Right.
But him dancing in that scene, which is kind of an awkward scene, everybody around him is like cringing. But I just felt like the actor was, like, loving that. And I thought his character was a pretty good addition to the Pygmalion My Fair Lady story. I mean, maybe that's in the other adaptations.
I just don't remember it. Not really, because the Professor Higgins character doesn't really have a love interest at all.
Yeah.
So this is, like, a total side story about let's just make fun of the real world and, like,
yes.
Celebrity culture, which they had no idea how much, like, worse and more that was going to become in the next 20 years.
Like, yeah.
Think about 20 years removed from that movie, like, how many more reality shows and people
like
who are
come out.
Famous because of their personality, like, exist. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting thing to play on there, definitely.
Yeah, very early
90s. Great.
Also, this cast.
I mean,
it's true.
It was like every person. I was like, oh, I know them from this. I know them from this.
Yes,
Usher is in it. Like,
right. It's kind of a who's who.
Yeah,
of who's gonna be things.
Yeah,
definitely.
Anna, what's her last name? Paquin.
Anna Paquin.
Yeah,
Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
Anna Paquin.
She's in it. That was funny.
Personal favorite of mine, Dulé Hill.
Yes, yes. I was waiting. yeah, and then everybody's in Psych, which
right, definitely,
which I love.
No, Gabrielle Union is in this.
Yeah, this was her debut, I think.
And also, I mean, like, she's also in 10 Things I Hate About You, so she definitely did the teen rom-com thing.
And she's great, too, because she genuinely likes Lainey.
Right.
Right? She... And she, I think, kind of changes, whereas the other friend, whose name I cannot remember, is all about that Taylor prom queen girl.
Yeah.
So I thought Gabrielle Union was a good
addition. They made her a nicer character in this than they made her in 10 Things I Hate About You. She was very much the, like, I'm going to take this man if you don't want him.
Yeah.
And first of all, Gabrielle Union's character in that movie, you shouldn't have wanted him. He was the worst.
The worst. Oh, man.
Great.
10 Things I Hate About You was, like, definitely number 4. That was a hard decision, those top 3.
It was, like, right movies. On the edge.
Yeah,
of being
right
on the
on
list.
The edge, yeah.
I do love 10 Things I Hate About
it's
You.
It's so good.
Last thing we wanted to talk about in this movie was the friend, Lainey's friend.
Yes! The ducky.
He's definitely the ducky of this movie. Gives me some very Pretty in Pink vibes of, like, he's so encouraging of you.
And loving. He's like, he wants the best for her.
Did you feel like he had a crush on her or was just genuinely her friend?
So I feel like in the scene where she says, I felt like he did until the scene where she says, am I kissable? And he's like, I don't know you're you. Right? And then he's like, yeah. Like later in the scene, he's like, yeah, you are. You know? But, I wasn't really sure, you know, up till then. I thought he liked her when they're sitting in the falafel place and talking and stuff. When Freddie Prinze Jr. comes in.
A falafel place.
Is it falafel? Right?
Yeah. I think it is. It's just such a
balls.
Nowadays, if this movie were made, that would definitely be a food truck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But let's talk about the friend for a second. Just generally, I feel like... I'm not sure if I have a read on whether or not he had a crush on her, but I feel like I don't necessarily want him to have had one on her either. Yeah. I want there to be a true platonic friendship there, so that you don't have to feel guilty about her going away with one guy or the other, that kind
of
thing.
Well, and he kind of seems interested in Anna Paquin in the end, right?
Sure, yeah.
But I do agree there, like, with Ducky, that's, like, the heart-wrenching part of Pretty in Pink, right?
Right.
Where it's, like, how could you choose
his name? Yes, you know? But I also personally kind of like that because I feel like so often in romantic comedies, the girl likes someone at the beginning and the movie teaches her
throughout the movie
that the real person you should like is this person. And in that movie, she likes Andrew McCarthy at the beginning and she likes him at the end and she gets him at the end. And it's not like, haha, you didn't know that men get to choose who likes
you. Yeah, or, oh, girls like bad boys.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Clueless, also a big makeover going on in here. Let's compare it to She's All That for a minute. does it work better or worse? And I think the biggest factor in this is the fact that Cher's the one conducting the makeover on a friend versus, obviously, the Freddie Prinze Jr. character is the one conducting a makeover on a prospective romantic interest, kind of.
Yeah,
there's some big politics there that I don't enjoy.
I think also for me in She's All That, it's like she's treated more like a doll. Like he brings her the dress, stuff like that. Whereas in Clueless, like they go shopping together, you know, I mean, she tries stuff on that I think they hand to her, but it's not like... Like, it doesn't feel like they're dressing her up or treating her like a doll. Whereas in She's All That, it did to me a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's also a line where they call it a makeover of the soul.
Yes, yes.
So give us the context on that.
So that is after Cher has, you know, things have gone downhill for Cher. Christian has saved Ty, and Ty is the most popular girl at school, and she feels like she's created a monster. She's starting to realize she has a crush on Josh, and that she maybe isn't as good of a person as she wants to be. So instead of focusing on her external appearance, she focuses on who she is inside. She gets involved in the environmental group at school, starts doing volunteer work. The skater guy, Travis, invites her to something. She's willing to go, even though he isn't part of her social group. And it isn't like a, oh, I pity you, or, oh, my, you know, my social standing is going to be impacted by this. It's like she genuinely seems to care about him a little bit more, which I liked. I liked that
that evolution of her character. I did think it was a little bit rushed. It's a
definitely
At the end of the movie,
sort of like, oh, we got to wrap this up, so makeover of the soul.
Yeah,
but it is interesting to have someone realize they need to change their behaviors and like their beliefs rather than like their outward appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
So granted, her outward appearance was already like flawless, but yes. I also like that you brought up the scene of where Murphy shaves his head, and there's
I forgot about a conversation
about an expectation of, you're supposed to look good for me, you're my man,
yeah,
I have to look at you,
what am I gonna do with you?
Yeah And it's interesting, most romantic comedies don't address a man changing his appearance
for a woman.
I can't really think of any great examples. I'm sure there are some. Listeners, you can tweet those at us.
Yeah.
But
maybe like Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds.
Mm. It's true.
But actually, he like loses weight and then comes back and they get together.
Yeah.
So it's not really for her.
Right.
I can't think of any.
Yeah. I'm sure there are some. Please let me know. There's also just some iconic clothes in this movie.
Yes. One thing I loved is there's like classy plaid and grunge plaid, and then like plaid no one should wear, like the boxers that all of the boys have, you know. I loved that. Yeah, there are some great. Also, the Christian, is that his name? The kid who's gay.
Yes.
Who like, you know, looks great, and she doesn't like the way high school boys dress, right? She thinks that they're too immature, and then he kind of shows up, right?
But Josh, Paul Rudd, dresses the most immature of all, it seems like.
Yeah.
She's just, like, sort of schlubbing around like a...
Yeah, the plaid
hipster.
Yeah. Like. I love it.
And
that scene where he grows the goatee is pretty good, too.
I mean, and let's talk a little bit about age differences here, which will be a good transition into Murphy's romance. So obviously there's some high school and college students dating in this movie. You know, what's like the public perception of that? And like, obviously Cher's like all for it. Like, you have to date college boys for the social status and for like the way that they look and all of that. And it's not that there should be anything wrong with that, but it's sort of like, I've always just personally felt like that the age differences between like high school and college are so much wider, even though it's really only a few years. Usually.
Yeah. Phase of life, I think, is huge there. And I mean, between 18 and 24, which is typical college age, right? You're making such serious life altering decisions. Whereas until you've hit 18, you can pretty much, you know, undo everything you've done a little bit. Which is why, you know, her evolution is interesting, her makeover of the soul. But I think that the age difference there wasn't as weird as the fact that they're, like, ex-steps.
Yes, okay, yes. Right? It's always the weirder thing.
Letting that go.
Right.
I do think it's just interesting. I think a lot of it is... and we've talked a little bit about this too, but society's perception that it's okay for an older man to date a younger girl, right? Whereas I haven't ever seen the reverse of a college girl dating a high school boy, right? Or boys like talking about college girls the way that they talk about college boys in this.
Yeah,
film.
Absolutely. So speaking of age differences, we're going to lead right into Murphy's romance.
Yes. 27 years. Yes. I did the math.
So, thank you for doing the math, Haley. This is, I know, a little bit of a lesser known sort of like rom-com. I'm sure that it has its fans, including my family. It's a personal favorite of mine and my mom's and even my grandpa's, honestly, who's a big James Garner fan.
Yeah.
And so this was Haley's first time watching it in preparation for this. And many of you out there probably haven't even seen it. I do encourage you to seek it out. It's a pretty cute little quiet story. I picked it for a few reasons. I just love the ending line, which, spoiler alert, the two main and most famous people in the movie get together. Shocker. It's a romantic comedy. Who could have seen that coming? And I just love that
James Garner says, I've fallen in love for the last time, and Sally Field says, I'm in love for the first time. And it's just sort of a nice little bookend on this is why this works with us. And just James Garner, he's just a personal favorite of mine. I love him opposite Doris Day. We talked about Maverick, and he's just... He's a good-looking man. He's got, like, a little bit of, like, that George Clooney vibe. Like, he just never really loses it.
He's very, like, he can do rugged and, like, classic tall, dark, and handsome. Totally. Like, he could pull either off, you know?
You believe he would be in the woods, and you believe he would be on Madison Avenue, and you're fine with him either place. Yes, so.
Exactly. He's great.
So, there is obviously, as Haley said, a 27-year age difference between these two people. And again, it seems like there is a little bit of perception in the town that, like, this is weird, that these people who are so different in age are, romantically linked. But I think, just generally in the public perception, as Haley was just saying, there is a perception that it's okay if the man's the older one.
Yeah.
So we made a list of the three women in Friends. Well, I guess Phoebe's brother is more who we were to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
So Phoebe's brother obviously married an older woman. Mm. Rachel once dated her assistant, and Monica dated Richard, and there was a significant age difference there as well. And all of those relationships were critiqued to a certain point. Which one do you think was critiqued the most? Like, said, this isn't good.
I think in the most episodes, Richard and Monica...
Okay.
Because he is in the show longer. But I think as far as, like, continual jibes, probably... Did I even say jibes right? Is that right?
Sure.
Probably Frank and Alice.
Yeah. And I think the Frank and Alice one is, to a certain extent, just accepted.
Yeah.
Because Frank is such an out-there character.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's obvious problems there in the fact that she was his teacher. I mean, there's some real...
Yeah, there's some real problems,
problems going on in that relationship as far as, like, should that be happening? Was this consensual?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And the Rachel dating her assistant thing, I personally think Eddie Cahill is one of the finest, finest actors out there.
And I think that once the friends meet him, like, the jibes kind of go away. Because it's like, oh, like, he's hot. Like, it's okay.
And he's not that much younger than them. He just, again, has the sort of, like, phase of life thing where he's not ready for a life commitment and she's ready to, like, have a baby and all of those kinds of things. Yeah. And that ultimately leads to their breakup.
I've forgotten that. Yes. Yeah.
The poor sweater.
I gotta rewatch those.
But back to Murphy's Romance. So I think I'm never bothered by the age because I just think James Garner is sexy.
Yeah. That helps.
I think Sally Field is also, like, such a driven woman, and you see what kind of man she's put up with in her ex-husband Bobby Jack, and you're like, yes, be with James Garner.
Yeah, be with somebody nice and solid. And we have to talk about Bobby Jack's relationship with the woman who has the twins, who's 18 years old, right?
Yes.
I haven't done the math on 33 minus 18, but...
But...
It's a few years.
Yeah, it's about 15, right? Yeah.
That's a pretty big age difference as well.
So, Bobby Jack is the worst, just for the record.
Yeah. For people that haven't seen the movie.
Yes.
Bobby Jack. not good.
Great.
The dancing scene in that one I wanted to talk about,
yes!
too. Yes! You might have thought I was going to forget, but I didn't. apparently, dancing scenes are my thing, but they kind of pass Sally Fields back and forth, and then there's a scene where she says, just dance with each other, and they do. Right? And I loved that they danced together because that for me was, like, the funny part. Before then I was like, oh, what's happening? Right? Like getting a little anxious, a little, and you know, secondhand embarrassment or whatever.
Yeah.
I've kind of watching them kind of fight for her, but I loved that kind of, like, all right, we will. And they did.
Right.
You know, that was very funny. Very, just cute.
It's an actual humorous moment.
Yeah.
Which, I was talking to some friends about this earlier this week, that I love the Hallmark Channel. They call their movies romantic comedies. I don't think they're romantic comedies because I don't think that making cookies and lightly tossing flour at each other is equivalent to comedy. You have to like actually elicit a laugh and not just like a, oh, that was cute, heartwarming. So like having James Garner and the Bobby Jack character dance together, that's an actual moment of humor that happens. So
So speaking of kind of, are they romantic? There are funny scenes in Dumplin, but I don't know if I watched it when I was in a serious, like the down with the patriarchy, right? And she does the punches and the karate as her talent.
Dumplin, I definitely, it feels like romantic comedy adjacent.
Yeah.
But it feels like the central relationship is more the mother and the daughter than, and which makes me think it's like not 100% a romantic comedy. She gets together with a person she's interested in at the end. And there's
who's always been interested in her.
Lots of funny stuff going on, but it's definitely,
but I wouldn't say it's as funny as other things that we watched.
No, definitely not. It's always, and this might be one of its flaws as much as it's one of its strengths, is that it's always, the forefront is always my appearance, my size, like how that affects how I navigate the world, obviously. I do think it's really interesting that there's a couple elements in that movie that kind of add layers of interest, that it uses Dolly Parton and her music.
Yes.
Who, obviously, she is an icon of accepting her own size and living in it and being proud of it.
That's my favorite quote is, I pay a lot of money to look this cheap. That's my favorite Dolly Parton quote. I just love it.
Yes.
I think another interesting element of Dumplin is that there are those drag queens who help those girls in the pageant just gain some extra confidence. Any particular moments you like with them?
I love when Wallace's dad from Lost, whose name I can never remember, I love when he talks about how beautiful the aunt was and how beautiful she is. I love when they're kind of teaching them to walk in the heels. They're super concerned, you know, the girls are super concerned about the mom, right, of the, her name is not Joy, but the really Christian girl. And that scene where she sits next to the drag queens and says, like, that's my girl, right? That's my child. And they're like, yeah, like we know, you know, but they're just excited that she's excited. I loved those moments. Also the fashion. I mean, they've got some great outfits. Any singing part I liked too, like at the end when the whole cast is kind of.
Yeah, they did have some cute little fun moments together to kind of, in some ways, lighten up the tone of the movie.
Yeah.
Let's return to Jennifer Aniston for a second and just talk about her role. How, I think she was a well cast in this movie.
Definitely, yeah.
Because she brings all of the Rachel-ness to the role. Yeah. So you already have a certain level of like for her if you have any sort of attachment to Friends. And I do think that also just the Jennifer Aniston-ness of her,
she also has the pressures that the mom faces.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Sort of like, do you still fit in that dress? Are you still America's sweetheart like we wanted you to be all along? Those kinds of pressures, definitely.
Great. I think she's fantastic in this role. I think so often in films and I don't know where I was going with that one. Films, they kind of play like the mom-daughter relationship can kind of be a source of conflict, right? Which it can be in real life. I'm not saying that mothers don't, you know, pressure their children or whatever, but I loved that she, I mean, obviously she has issues with her daughter's weight, but there's also scenes where you can see her being proud of her daughter, right? Like when the person is like, oh, this must be your daughter to the friend. And she's like, oh no, this is my daughter. And, obviously she's so proud of her at the end, especially with her amazing talent and that gorgeous red dress she's wearing and things like that.
But I think she really brings a lot of sweetness that they kind of needed, because one powerful message of the movie is that it's her own perception, right? She's holding herself back. Bo is interested in her. Her mom loves her, right? It's just kind of how she perceives herself and how she thinks other people are perceiving her. You know, the Christian girl, I think, helps with that too, right? And there's a scene where she's like, are you really this dumb? You know, like, obviously they make fun of you for being fat or whatever. And I can't remember what the girl says, but it's something like, oh, that doesn't bother me or whatever, you know? Which I just loved as somebody who always is worried about what people think of me. Like, that message I thought was really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's it's narratively satisfying that she ends up winning the pageant.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Great. Any other notes about Dumplin'?
I thought it was great.
Okay, yeah. It's good upon a rewatch. I'd only watched it the one time when it first premiered on Netflix, and I came back to it and was like, this is worth multiple viewings. So
yeah, if you haven't revisited it three or four times. Yeah.
It's not To All the Boys I Loved Before, but it's see, real I would good. Say
it's better than To All the Boys I Loved Before.
All right. Well, that's a podcast.
Although I did think that the love interest in To All the Boys I Loved Before was cuter.
Yes. Yeah. No Centineo is a podcast for another day.
Yeah, definitely.
and with that, we are going to say goodbye to Haley, and I will be right back.
As I release this episode, the United States is about 1 month removed from the 2021 presidential inauguration, which included the first swearing-in of a woman vice president in Kamala Harris. But what if a woman were commander-in-chief? And in the 1960s, no less.
That's the scenario presented in the 1964 film Kisses for My President.
I caught it recently on Turner Classic Movies. What can I say? I'm a rom-com completist. Plus, it didn't hurt that one of my favorite TV dads, Fred McMurray of My Three Sons, plays the first gentleman. One thing about this movie really worked. Polly Bergen as President Leslie McLeod was a force to be reckoned with. There are a few scenes of her taking care of some foreign policy, and she definitely has the backbone for the job. Here's what didn't play as well. First Lady Thad McLeod complains openly and often about having to resign his own job so that his wife can take her new position. He also gets very bothered about having to attend to social duties like menu planning and garden parties that are typically reserved for the First Lady. And he's coyly annoyed about having not much private time with his wife now that she's working late hours, you know, negotiating with the leaders of foreign countries. But the worst part was the ending. The president faints one day while doing a walk and talk, and the next scene is a press conference where she announces both her pregnancy and her resignation from office so she can devote herself full time to her family. Now, let me be clear. I support any woman who wants to run for office or devote her working hours to family duties. Both choices and everything in between are valid. I don't even begrudge this movie for being of its time. The point of deconstructing romantic comedies is not to judge them by today's standards. What irked me about this movie was the squandered premise and the relegation of its Madam President into a supporting role. This could have been so much more than a, golly gee, wouldn't it be kooky if a woman were POTUS? Where's the better version of that movie? I hope I get to see it in my lifetime.